What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Good Anime Palette Podcast. This is After Dark number 15. I am your co-host Jason, and joining me after hours is none other than my partner in crime, my PIC, Will.
After hours, you're making it sound like we're doing overtime for this thing. It's not necessarily overtime. This is our job, right? This is what we are supposed to be doing for this podcast, to continuously record content for the listeners, whether it be BP and AD or a regular episode. So, yeah, show goes on. So, for today, what are we going to be talking about? I hope it's something light and easy.
Well, I'm glad you asked, Will, because we are talking about the Israel Palestine. No, I'm just kidding.
No opinions on that.
No opinions on that, by the way.
Completely impartial.
But what we will be talking about is probably going to be a multi-part segment at some point. But I dubbed it, or I named it.
Dubbed it.
Yeah, I get it. The Sub and Dub Saga Part 1, : The Woes of Localization.
Now, just to be clear, whilst we are talking about a certain aspect within subs and dubs, this isn't an After Dark solely dedicated to the whole sub versus dub debate, simply because this is a long feud that has existed before civilization existed. So, yeah, I don't think that just an hour and a half of talking about subs and dubs will do any justice to this, nor do I think Jason or I want to get involved into the whole sub versus dub debate, because that shit needs to die. Like, just watch anime however you like it.
Yeah, and I think that argument, other than maybe looking at it from a technical standpoint, there might be drilling here.
Again, yeah, no, it's unfortunately like still ongoing, but I think the noise is at a minimum, so yeah. We should be okay.
But this one is particularly has been kind of in the making, in the oven for quite some time, because recent events have kind of resurfaced about the sub, dub, and more importantly, localization. And we will be going over a lot of maybe the happenings of it and looking at it from more of an objective and scholarly debate, rather than looking at it in terms of trying to spill tea or talk about drama. It's more of I got inspired by the recent events in December, January, and this is kind of how I feel like a thing that I think Will and I would want to talk about in terms of the technical, as well as looking at it from a more academic standpoint of subs, dubs, and translations and stuff, because we have even friends who work actually at Netflix who do translations, maybe not necessarily for anime, but definitely has done translations of sorts. So Will also majors in translation, so I think it's a part of anime and manga that is near and dear to both of us in general.
I mean, it's a very important topic, because in the end, like, yes, we are all very aware anime comes from Japan, and not all anime viewers are Japanese or understand Japanese, so it is kind of hard for us to just watch the source material without having some aid in a language that we are familiar with, which is why, like, a lot of anime that Jason and I have watched essentially are dubbed or subbed. Like, it's going to be one or the other.
Yeah, and so I want to actually spend some time, unfortunately, time and time again, to go over some disclaimers and definitions. But I think this one is very important, because there are just certain things that I just want to lay out such that we don't cause any misunderstandings for either the rest of this episode or this part of whatever this saga that we're dubbing is going to be. The first thing we want to do is just not have a debate about sub versus dub, which one is superior or not. I think it's very easy for Will and I to say our opinion, which we just said earlier, which is watch it however you like, and you should not hate on others for one way or the other. But we all have our own preferences and our reasons for such preferences.
Yeah, we're going over a specific area within subs and dubs. So it's subs and dubs. We're not talking about subs versus dubs. So let's just get that out of the way.
Yep. And the other thing that is related to that is no hate to throw. I mean, I think everyone always has it as a disclaimer.
Whether you watch your dubs or watch your subs, if it works for you, it works for you. I don't care how you watch your shit. I watched them with subs. People might hate me for it. People might think I'm a lunatic and not learning Japanese. Well, sorry, fuck you. I don't have time to learn Japanese at all. Like, I'm going to watch my anime in Japanese voices with English subtitles. That's how it's going to be for me. Or if any case, if I'm watching it with my wife, then I'll be watching it with Chinese subtitles.
I am also in the similar camp of usually I would watch anything that is foreign to me of a language I don't understand, but I would watch it in its original language with English subtitles because that's generally my most fluent language, or Chinese if necessary. I think in Hong Kong, there are certain movies or anime movies even where they only had Chinese subtitles, but Will and I can read Chinese, so there's no issue there.
No.
But obviously with anime...
Well, there is an issue, but not the issue you think, and which we'll dive deeper into it.
Yeah, yeah. I think I know, I'm picking up what you're putting down. But yeah, generally, just to be clear, Will and I are, in terms of anime and manga...
Completely impartial
not manga, sorry. Anime is Japanese audio, English subs, and maybe some, in certain cases, Chinese subs.
If you were to watch it in whatever language you choose to listen to, that's completely on you as well. I honestly do not care what you choose to watch or listen to.
Now, this topic is also not going to be going into the intricacies and a comprehensive look into translations, dubbing, and the subtitling industry at large, because that subject is way too dense and deserves multiple episodes or multiple attempts to try to tackle all of it as a whole. But we will be touching upon elements of translations, subtitling, dubbing, and localization in this AD. The other thing is recent events has inspired Will and I to make this episode. We wanted to wait a bit for everything to kind of compiled up so then we can kind of look at it.
Or maybe die down a little bit so that people aren't as riled up about it.
Yeah, and heated about that too. So that's why also within this AD and probably a lot of discussions on this set topic, we are focusing on Japanese to English and maybe within this particular context, Chinese. But for the most part, it's concerning English and Japanese as the two dominant languages of discussion. It's impossible to cover every other single language. We also don't know, and we won't pretend to know that we are fluent in every other single language. We're not a polyglot, as they say. And since English is our primary language, we speak in English. So yeah, that's pretty obvious, but that's why we limited it. What is this AD, though, about? It's to educate and provide a platform for us to really give our takes on the ongoing and, in my opinion, somewhat severe issue. And what I mean by severe, I mean in terms of its impact in shifting the dynamics of the things that we are accustomed to currently or, you know, somewhat recently. Because I think a lot of changes that are starting to happen now that we have even reported on multitude of times will continue to really shape a lot of the industry that we know and love going forward. And the last thing is, we just wanted to have a discussion, kind of also combine like some BP topic-ish kind of thing. So we will really get into that. And this is just only our opinion and take. Take it with a grain of salt. And even though you shouldn't take us at our word in terms of us being absolute in our truths, but we're pretty good, right?
Yeah, we can get started with maybe talking about what localization is. So first of all, we have to keep a good separation between translation and localization. Whilst they attempt to do a similar thing, they have their own way, their own methodology of getting an end result. So translation, point and simple, is the change of text or speech from one language to another language, be it English to Japanese or Japanese to English in the context of anime, or even with manga as well, right? Now localization does do some translation, but more in the sense of being able to create a environment or a service or product that caters more to a particular country, area, demographic, whatever it may be. There is an actual Cambridge Dictionary definition which defines localization as the process of making a product or service more suitable for a particular country, area, and so on and so on. So in terms of localization, it isn't just simply changing Japanese to English and English to Japanese, because, well, I can go into like the whole plethora of ways to do translation, but the idea behind localization is that you're supposed to take in the social cultural contexts of a particular speech and adapting it to a new environment, a new area that may or may not have that particular correlation, or at least maybe that kind of understanding, so that when the translations are done, it's not kind of like robotic, it's not like a Google Translate. There actually is some thought behind how to portray a certain mannerism of a character, or the certain gravity of a situation, or even just the way that characters kind of, you know, express emotion or honorifics or stuff like that. So there are a couple of examples in terms of how localization is done, whether it be through subbing or dubbing. So, for example, like using slang terms or tone of voice. So, like the most famous of them all would be the Tokyo and like the Kansai dialect, where it's a little bit more sort of like rural bumpkin kind of, you know, voice tones. There's also ways in which like gangsters and gyarus talk. So, you know, when you see like a yakuza, like a underling kind of talking to like the general public, or when you go to a school environment and you have a gyaru talking to like a main character, the way that they, like, you know, their demeanor definitely differs in terms of like the quote unquote regular speech patterns of the main characters, whether they are from like a specific demographic, a specific area, a specific history, whatever it may be.
So going off of those examples that Will gave, sometimes a lot of people in subbing or dubbing would typically translate or turn the Kansai accent, if a character has it or from that region, in terms of giving it a more like southerner vibe, would you say?
No.
Like, or have like a lot of apostrophes to like a... what's the term? Like a speech to like, not slur it, but like, you know how like in, there's like the Beijing accent where they kind of curl or roll a lot.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. I don't know the technical term.
It's not
term.
Necessarily Beijing, but it's more like a northern Chinese dialect where they have, it's called Huaiyin.
Okay.
So it's like, instead of saying the Nichuan, you can say Nichuar.
Right.
So they have like the R at the end to, you know, have more of an emphasis on it.
And with the slang terms, I mean, think of probably everyone's favorite waifu, my dress-up darling, I guess, Marin Katagawa would use stuff like, oh, totes, I believe that, or it really hits them in the feels. That is something that obviously is not necessarily one-to-one equivalent to the Japanese.
There's also, for example, like when you call someone an idiot, right? But in Japanese, it could be boke, baka, aho, right? There's a multitude of those, right? So how are you going to like differentiate what a baka is, what a boke is, what a aho is, right?
Yeah, and you could use the same word, which is idiot, but it also loses a bit of that nuance, kind of like that extra layer of connotation that is really hard sometimes to translate one-to-one. And what we're also trying to say is shit ain't easy. It's not like everything equals something in another language and it's going to be the equivalent exactly the same.
Yeah, there's never like a one-to-one in languages, right? For example, like you can say watashi wa, you can say boku wa, but they all mean I or me, right? Like, so what is the difference between the two? Like, for like the standard English listener, probably not all that much, but in Japanese there are going to be certain contexts when you use one or the other.
In terms of like mannerism and how polite you are to the individual that you are conversing with, right?
Like, for example, like you. How many ways can you say you in English? Just you, right? In Chinese, like Mandarin Chinese, there's ni or nin, depending on whether you're talking to, you know, someone of equal, quote-unquote, like, standing, mm-hmm. or talking to someone that's like an elder, someone that is superior to you, whatnot. But like, in Japanese, there is anata, kimi, omae, sanata, teme, anta, sochira, kisama, onore, jibun, onushi, otaku, sochi, kiden, nanji, ondore, antasama. Like, there's so many ways of saying that one specific word, mm-hmm. that when you do translation, how do you choose one or the other?
Yeah, because not only do you need to be good at the language comprehension, you also then also have to factor in not only the context of maybe that anime or that you are doing the, you know, the adaptation for, but then there's also maybe context like the accent, as we mentioned, right? Or this is a superior senpai to a kohai. It really does factor into so many different facets, right?
Or if you're doing, for example, like sayings or phrases or even poems, right? Like, it's simple when you have seen like Chinese like poems being translated to English. You do it word for word, shit don't make sense. The same in Japanese as well. And so it takes a certain level of understanding of the language, of the culture, and the context in which that poem or that phrase is used to be able to think of what the meaning is and how to translate or even localize it for an English or like a foreign audience compared to someone who is a native Japanese speaker and listener.
Right. But okay, Jason, okay, Will, you're mentioning all this stuff, but how does, like, can you give me some examples in anime and manga? Okay, no problem. A literal translator who was a veteran decided to retire because of Cypher Academy. Because the riddles and the way that it is expressed is so challenging that the guy just threw in the hat and being like, yo, I'm out, because it's so difficult. And at the same time, everyone understands it. Why? Like, oh, right. Like, it's not like he bailed. It's more like, I really tried. And everyone's like, no, you really did try. Like, and then to make matters a bit more complicated, right? Although, I mean, it reminds me of, isn't there like a type of native Eskimos that have like 30 different words
for the word snow?
For the word snow, yeah. Because on the way it drops, the texture and the feeling. But we don't have really, maybe in English, maybe there's like slush, snow, sleet. Mud, sleet, and then like
hail, stuff like that.
And then that's it, right? But it's so intricate. And things like, if we go by Chinese standards, we have cheng yu, which is kind of like sayings, yeah,
forward,
right?
Phrases.
Forward, or phrases. Yeah. But how can you even translate that in English? It's like, you could translate it word for word, but that's not always the right answer all the time, or even any of the time. I don't know, right? It's tough because what do you do?
Well, I mean, there was that anime or manga you mentioned in like a previous episode, right? Tengo Tenge, right?
Yeah.
Tin Ha, which if you were to, I mean, like the contextual and literal translation is heaven and earth,
right?
But if you were to translate it literally, like word for word, it means like above up the sky
and below the sky.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Right? So like, if you were to do it word for word, like verbatim, a lot of stuff just would not make sense. And therefore, it loses a lot of contextual importance when you're trying to showcase like something that is important to a specific character, a specific setting, a specific plot. That's why like localization itself is actually like insanely important when it comes to knowing how to translate a piece of work, specifically like in this instance, like an anime or a manga.
So in your opinion, Will, what is the difference between translation and localization? It's a very big question, but to kind of give some context in terms of your linguistic kind of knowledge, right?
In essence, there really isn't a whole lot to define the difference between what localization is and what translation is, because both of them end up doing the same job. I think in the end, it just comes down to whether you are a localizer or a translator, what angle of translation you're going for. That's the main difference there. So it's not to say that localization only does things from a contextual standpoint or a cultural standpoint, and translation is just a word for word trying to find a similar kind of representation of one language from another.
Yeah, language is an art form, so therefore trying to decipher a certain language to make it palatable to another language is also an art form in of itself. There are rules like grammar and certain word choices that you're bound by in theory, but there is no right or wrong answer, despite apparently a lot of people seemingly thinking it as such. And I think that is both a fascinating topic, but it's a really hard one, because it's almost like everyone is okay. A lot of people are appropriate for the job, but those same people may not be right for the job all the time. And there is no right or wrong about it. Yeah. Do you know?
I think in the end, it's basically not even in the end. We're only just starting this discussion. I think when it comes to trying to find a difference between localization and the differences are so nuanced.
In the extremely. End, yeah.
Where it's just literally like you say, like, oh, the, you know, localization means they're coming from a more cultural, contextual angle. But it's like you could do that in translation as well. You just have to look into what you're translating, who you're translating it for, and doing that. That's not to say that like translators can't do what a localizer does, or a localizer does way more than a translator, and vice versa. It's just that I think that as a society, we have to put a label on things for things that exist, and that they are a little bit, you know, against the grain of what we know as a quote unquote normal or standard. So it's definitely a term that has more risen up in the past year or so, like very, very recently, in terms of, you know, the uprise of the word localizing, localizer, localization. I think it's mostly because the fact that the word is more attached to controversies as opposed to just pure translation. So that's my take on it. We'll dive deeper into like the areas of localization. In fact, you know, like why don't we, you know, go into the next part in terms of like localization, like what the good, bad, and the ugly of it, really.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I think we have to sort of compartmentalize this localization here, because the news stories that have come up in the past few weeks, the past few months, have centered around, I guess, the sort of bad representation that localization has. So let's sort of just go over the positive sides of localization, in that, you know, it allows for people who are unfamiliar with the source, especially when it comes to talking about like feudal Japanese terms, history, names, things like that, which, I mean, just flat out don't exist outside of a Japanese context. And so you need to be able to find that bridge so that the consumer of your product isn't just left in the dark and being like, oh, I guess a Shinigami is a Shinigami, right? No, you want to at least give the listener or the viewer a better idea of what a Shinigami is. And it's not just plain and simply like a god of death or like a death bringer or whatnot. There's like other layers that come along with it. And it's up to the localizer and hopefully the progression of the anime or manga to be able to really drive home the importance of that specific word and how it portrays itself across other languages.
I think one of the, regardless of how you feel about localization, the state of it, or the translation in terms of literal, contextual, all of that, we all, through all of this labeling, sometimes mislabeling, inaccurate kind of throwing around these words without really knowing the nuances, which is hard for a lot of people to know, including myself, is the main, in my opinion, the main objective of all of these things is to make communication such that you understand what is presented to you because it is in a foreign language. Yep. Or expression.
A translator can do a localizer's job, and a localizer's job is to do translation. So there really is no major discernible difference between the two. It just depends on the room of like,
yeah,
contexts, yeah, that you're trying to discuss this particular topic.
And that's the label, because we compartmentalize it, there is like, it's tagged with, oh, if you're a localizer, it means this. If you're a translator, it means this. Yeah. When actually, it is not that clear cut. They're all intertwined. And that is both a difficult...
In some cases, you could even say they're the same thing.
Yes.
Right? Like
that, in some cases, why, they are, yeah, the same thing. Yeah. So it's really difficult in order to have everyone be on the same page, because as you said with the Shinigami example, an example of how I would translate it in one way is, well, maybe there isn't one like that, right? There isn't a word like that in English. So I'll just use the word Shinigami, because that's straightforward. But then people will be like, okay, I can read that word. I can pronounce it in English. I still know what the fuck that means. Or you could say, oh, hey, it is this. But then to really understand the significance of this, you really need to study and like this whole massive, like, wall of text and pre-context,
let's put it this way, right? Mm-hmm. If you were just to go by how Wikipedia defines Shinigami. Sure. Shinigami are kami that invite humans toward death in certain aspects of Japanese religion and culture. First of all, which aspects? Second, yep, of all, what the fuck is a kami, right?
Right.
Okay, well, let's look into kami. Kami are deities, divinities, spirits, mythological, spiritual, or natural phenomena that are venerated into the Shinto religion. Okay, so first of all, there's like seven different things that you just described there. Like, so what kami are of a natural phenomena? Which ones are divinities? Which ones are spirits? Which ones are of a like mythological predisposition?
And then on top of all that, and some animes when they mention, oh, kami-sama, right? It means like I respect you almost to the level of a god. So okay, does that mean deity is God, or does that mean like where does that go in? Because a lot of people use kami-sama as God.
That, and also you're talking about something that venerated in the Shinto religion.
Right.
What the fuck do we know about the Shinto religion? Well, why don't we have a look at what the Shinto religion is? It's a religion originating from Japan, classified as an East Asian religion by scholars of religion. Its practitioners often regard it as Japan's indigenous religion and as a nature religion. Fuck, what the hell is a nature religion? Oh, okay.
Oh, and then it's like, oh, what about Gaia? Oh, where does that fit in? So and then you, it's just like,
so
oh.
So now you kind of understand this clusterfuck, this rabbit hole of having to try and translate something that legitimately requires like weeks and weeks of research and study to be able to, as closely as possible, portray its original meaning.
And by the way, Will and I spent the last couple of minutes trying to debunk this to illustrate this example of one word. One word.
Yeah.
So imagine one episode worth of content. Sure, there's a lot of words that are more obvious, right? That doesn't have that level of complexity needed. No problem. But still, just think of like the volume that you need to have that context. And a lot of people either don't care or don't even know where to start.
Or think it should be more simple than that. In which case, I'm sorry, it's really not that simple.
Yeah. But on the other hand, you could, in essence, as maybe your way of doing things, just be like, well, it's impossible for the viewer, the reader, the listener to digest all this information, to know all this context because of, with, let's say, feudal Japan and all this stuff. Why don't I just use a word that just gets the message across? Which is not necessarily always the most elegant way, and not always, in many people's opinion, the right way. But it also gets the job done in such a way where a lot of people probably didn't need to know all that context. But oh, okay, if it's a god, then in that maybe particular example, it's not that egregious if it was split between a deity or a god.
Let's also like make it in a more simple like way of understanding. How does a dog bark?
Woof,
right? But does a dog woof in Japanese? No. They say wong wong. Right? So that's basically like it's not as like simple as like, oh, a dog sounds the same in every culture, in every language. No. Like, even when it comes to onomatopoeia, even when it comes to replicating sounds an animal makes, it's not the same as, oh, birds chirp. Well, birds don't chirp in Japanese. They don't chirp in Chinese. They don't chirp in whatever other language outside of English. So there's going to be different representations or even interpretations of how a certain sound is produced depending on which culture, which context you're coming from.
Right.
It's really weird. We want to try and simplify, but even with that, it's still really not that simple. When it comes to doing translation or quote-unquote localization, there are so many factors that you have to account for that even trying to replicate something that was presented in Japanese and then moving it into English, you're never at any point going to have a 100% replica or representation of the original intent, the original meaning, the original context.
I think also there's a balance between compromising, right? In terms of, because there is no direct one-to-one 100% to turn it into another 100% into like from 100% A to 100% B, right? You're going to have to make compromises at some point. And it is at the translator, localizer, the person's decision as to how to navigate it. And maybe in one instance, that same person would say, no, it's the literal translation. But then with another one, it would be a more nuanced kind of context, right? if there's a butler trying to speak, maybe you use more flowery, floral language. Does that mean that it is very different than the what the person says in Japanese? Probably, actually, because of the hierarchy in terms of politeness. But how do you express that? If you use very floral language, it might give you a very, you know, like a noble, you know, of a butler being, you know, like the traditional sense. And then that gets the illustration of the tone across. Maybe not the complete meaning, but enough such that you get the gist of it, right? And I think a lot of people seem to have issue with localizers kind of taking the liberty, which is also part of a big part of what I want to focus on within this AD. But also, come on, can we also throw a lot of people a bone? It's really hard to do that.
Yeah, I mean, like, as much as I've studied translation and interpretation for 2 years when I was doing my master's, I can't even get round to doing a full consecutive or simultaneous translation just because of the fact that I have to take in so many factors and also be 100% fluent or confident in my ability to speak two different languages at the same time and to be able to like actually convey the original meaning. And that's impossible.
And here's the other hard part, Will. Let's say that you are the best localizer translator in human fucking history. Okay, no problem. You're going to translate Aho Girl, for argument's sake.
Okay, all right. I like you went with that one. For sure.
I know. But what if I am the viewer and I'm a really big Aho? Not an enjoyer of Aho Girl, but I don't even know all the context. So even if you have everything and you make it the most eloquent, the most elegant transition from Japanese to English, what if I don't get it because as a general audience,
I could be as understanding of people not knowing the context, and all it takes is one person to not know what I'm talking about to lose all its meaning.
Yeah. And if you're an audience of one, that's a big deal.
Yeah. Because then that means the whole show, you're not going to understand.
And not throwing shade at the general public and the population of the planet Earth, but we're all, by definition, cannot be perfect, smart, educated in every single domain and every single facet to be able to sometimes have the same kind of reception when someone gives us the best translation possible, which is not possible anyways. So even if you do everything right, you could still be bad at your job in a way. So in that sense, it might be very compromising from maybe a purist standpoint because you didn't translate it literally, but maybe the majority of the message gets across or the essence of it gets across. For example, with a Kansai, why did we, anime dubbing, subbing as a whole, decided to use the Kansai accent, and a common compromise is to use it mixed with a southern twang, a southern accent, because it's as close as it can get and it gets the message across fast enough that you don't need to ponder. You get it right away and you can move on and enjoy the product, which is kind of like another main thing.
Yeah.
So enjoy and understand the product.
Yeah. Just want to emphasize this particular point, right? Like, depending on which sites, which studies, or which research you look into, generally around 40% of the world population is monolingual.
Okay.
Right? And remember, monolingual, that doesn't mean that their only language is English, because believe it or not, English is not the only widespoken language in the world, right? They could maybe only speak Russian. They might only be able to speak Japanese. They might only be able to speak Korean, French, German, Afrikaans, Swahili, whatever it may be. So then when you think about how if there is that many people who only understand one language, and it could be a plethora of different languages, you got your work cut out in terms of like trying to figure out how you're going to translate something.
Right.
Right? You just can't.
I mean,
unfortunately.
Then within like a region, there's dialects. In Cantonese kind of translations, especially when we read mangas, right? There is kind of two ways that I kind of see, at least I recall growing up. There is the very straightforward, as if I'm reading a text. And then there is almost like slang Chinese written in the way that you would converse.
Yeah.
Because in Cantonese, at least, when you were to, you know, recite something in class or as a speech, it's very different than when I converse with Will or any other person on a day-to-day basis. So that's a big difference too.
Yeah. One major gripe that I want to talk about as well when it comes to the term localizers is that the way that people define what a localizer does is that they translate contextually and culturally from one thing to another, whether it be a country, a culture, an area, or whatever it may be. But what's the locale that you are translating for, right? Like, are you translating for California? Are you translating for Copenhagen? Are you translating for Reykjavik? Are you translating for Hong Kong and so on? Like, as an example, we talked about this manga series in our ASAP 5, The Fable, right?
Yep.
Where the main character has to essentially, you know, do his thing and has to lay low. And he happens to be in an area which is in, like, the Kansai region, Osaka, right?
Yep.
And so, therefore, he needs to sort of change his speech patterns so that rather than speaking like he's from Tokyo, he's speaking like he's from Osaka.
He changes in the car, too. It's hilarious.
By the way, we are reading this in English.
Mm-hmm.
And we might have heard the Kansai accent, but you can't necessarily give a one-to-one representation of what a Kansai accent is to someone that is in America or someone that's in the UK, right? And what's interesting as well is when you're reading the manga, when he actually starts speaking in his Kansai dialect, he says words like hella, which originated from Northern California.
Like, hella, bro, let's surf it out.
Yeah, that's, well, and so therefore it's like, that's not a Southern thing, right? That's not a Southerner rural kind of accent as depicted by the Japanese when talking about the Kansai dialect. So who are you localizing for? What locale is the primary focus that you're translating these works into?
Now, when you are localizing for one person, like Will would be localizing or translating for me, or we do for, let's say, our parents, right? It's like an audience of one or two people. It's very easy to adjust accordingly because you're only catering to not only someone that you're familiar with, but you can then readjust really quick on the fly and get the message across. But when you're subtitling for English for all of the English speakers, the fuck are you going to do?
And that's the other thing, too. We have, like, okay, when it comes to, like, voice acting, right? We don't want to go that deep into it because that's another rabbit hole,
that's another rabbit hole.
Like, there's a plethora of Japanese voice actors and actresses. There's so many agencies and schools that you can go to try and brush up their skills and get jobs in that field. In the West, specifically for working in voice acting as a dubber for Japanese anime or even just anime in general, like whether it be Korean, Chinese, or whatever, it's not a whole lot of people. But at the same time, it's like the majority of them are like American or Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
But is that like the representation of the West? Like, why do we not have any Australian voice actors or actresses? Why do we not have any British or Irish voice acting actresses and actors?
You do. You have plenty of them that are, like, for example, live action actors, or they are musicians and singers, but then they change it into your typical American accent in order to make it recognizable, palatable for that audience.
And so therefore, like, when it comes to doing the whole localizing thing, like, you localize it for the West, but Western cultures across, you know, Britain and Ireland and Australia, New Zealand, Canada, America, like, they're not the same.
It's, yeah.
There's no one for one for any of these.
So also going off of like the voice acting talent, like the well of it, it goes to, in my opinion, not the bad parts of localization, because I feel that it's really disingenuous, but the limited parts of Western localization. And I think, as you said, if you're a seiyuu in Japan, Kanahana is hailed as a mega celebrity. I would say way crazier than a lot of people outside of Japan or who are not acquainted with anime and manga really understand how famous they are. But not to throw shade at anyone who does voice over work in the West, but, you know, people like, I think Tara Strong does a lot of cartoon voices, does like Bubbles, I think, and so many voices. And there are so many, like, you know, in video games is also a very good example of, like, you know, I think like Nolan North, Troy Baker, who are just exceptionally talented individuals. And there's, I'm missing out on so many people, right? But in essence,
I mean, I can't believe you didn't name David Hayter.
So it's Snake.
Yeah.
Hey, Snake.
What's Octa? What's the guy? What's the professor name? Octavius.
Dr. Octavius?
No, not Dr. Octavius. But he talks to the person in the radio. Oh. Starts with OCT something.
Otacon.
Otacon, right. And he's just like, Otacon,
I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And then, okay. But that aside, right? The amount of people that have that culture to develop that culture is very limited in the West in comparison to Japan. I would argue a lot of voice talents gravitate towards video games, and in that sense, it has developed significantly in that area. But still, I would argue Kanahana is way more of a household name than David Hayter. You would still know David Hayter, but you probably, a lot of people who played Metal Gear Solid, I would say a good amount of them probably didn't even know who David Hayter is. Would you say so?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'd say like if you are like a hardcore Metal Gear fan, like
that's already your issue. It's hardcore.
There's so many people that would like have been dying to hear David Hayter voice Snake again. But I get where you're coming from in the sense that like from a larger scope with David Hayter, David Hayter is known as Snake.
Yes. Whereas, among other roles, but mainly Snake.
Whereas Kanohana has had so many acting roles. It's not necessarily a fair comparison.
It is not a fair comparison. I think that's my point.
But that's the example you're going with, right? It makes sense in this particular instance.
And because that is my point, because David Hayter is still so talented, so well-known within that space. But within the context of the West and David Hayter and Kanohana and Japan and anime, I would argue it's no comparison. Kanahana is second to none.
I think it's like if you were to compare like an equivalent to Kanahana, you would be looking at like a John DiMaggio or like an H. John Benjamin from Western like animation.
And if you don't recognize those names, by goddamn, when you hear it, you'll be like, oh, right, it's that person from that role and that role.
Y'all, please tell me y'all know who Billy West is, right? Like, come on. Like, these are, like, really, really important people when it comes to voice acting in animation. But, you know, like, that's why, like, the mediums are very, very different. If you're going to be doing, like, Western voice acting, chances are you're going to be doing it for Western animation, right? It's not that big of a wheelhouse when it comes to looking at voice acting as a Westerner for dubbing.
Yeah, and let's not go far from Japan and our local wheelhouse, Hong Kong, when we grew up and watched like cartoons like Doraemon.
Dude, there was only like 5 voices.
Yeah, like, and then they would voice the next cartoon that would air right after Doraemon, right? And that's not
the same people you hear in Pokemon, or the same people you hear in Digimon, or the same people you hear in Chibi Maruko-chan, and so on and so on.
And what's wrong with that? Almost nothing, because it's what are you going
to
do?
It's what we had to work with.
What are you going to do, right? Yeah, sure, you could criticize, oh, you hear only the same 5-10 voices. Well, then, that's not their fault. They're just trying to make a living. They're trying to make a career. And then why don't, you know, the government or, you know, the industry do something about it, right?
Now, we're talking about people who get kind of, like, riled up or pissed off when, like, they're translating something from Japanese into their own language. But let's look at the inverse, and we talk about Japanese people who are pissed off at the way Japanese is translated into other languages, whether it be talking about video games, whether it be talking about light novel adaptations, like fucking the Monogatari series, and Japanese fans coming up, even like manhwas or Korean dramas. Dude, there was a lot of vitriol from Korean fans that were complaining about when Squid Game got translated into English with the subs, and they were saying they fucked it all up. Like, a lot of the stuff that they translated from Korean into English does not make sense. It doesn't encapsulate the gravity of the situation. It makes this character look weaker than they are, or more evil than they are, when really it's not all that, like, it's not the way that they're supposed to be portrayed.
Or supposed to be more ambiguous, even though it has, like, this evilish kind of sinister connotation, right?
But it's the word of the day that you started off with, which is compromise.
Exactly.
You're not going to be able to fully capture the essence of one into another, whether you are on the receiving end or not.
Yeah. And not another point of why English localization is limited is, as we mentioned, the well of talent. But we also mentioned previously when we were trying to get into this whole localization topic is how difficult in terms of like the prerequisite text and cultural significance that you need to understand, and then the nuances of like even the same kind of word that doesn't have that level of breadth or special context when you is just you in English, but there is like tens of ways of addressing you as an individual versus just using Y-O-U. It's super difficult. And to cap that all off, right, the issue then becomes, well, is that okay?
I think we're in an age where not only do we want things to be fast and convenient, we also want things to be perfect.
And good and timely. And
but everything is far from ideal. There's never a chance that you can get all three at the same time, right?
Yep.
Especially and like you can get things fast and convenient. Those have been achievable. We have seen it before. But to get things perfect, like again, perfect in itself is very much
a subjective.
You cannot tell me that a 10 out of 10 anime for me has the exact same weight and value as a 10 out of 10 anime for you.
And by the way, we're both right and wrong at the same time, because they're both 10 out of 10s for each of us, but the other one's 10 out of 10 is not. But does that mean our opinions are invalid? No, it's not.
And so therefore, when it comes to sort of like criticizing the qualities or the values of like translations and localization, quote unquote, whether you are the one receiving the translation or you are the one who has had their works translated, unfortunately, there's going to be one or two things that fall by the wayside. That's how it's going to be. And I'm sure that nobody goes about doing this job with the intention of ruining something or mistranslating something.
It could be debatable, your motives, but there's no way to know for sure. And also, who is to say that us, like armchair critics or whatever from afar, has it right all the time or any time? So before we kind of get into probably the break, I just kind of want to emphasize kind of like in like the most shortest thing, the current landscape of the industry and very fast, quick and loose, the situation that it is. And then after the break, I will kind of get into what is now known, kind of called the Kobayashi incident with the dubs. And then we'll get into...
Do we need a break or do you think we can just power straight through?
Fuck it. Then we'll power fucking straight through it.
We will still credit the mid-roll though.
Right. So we still have to break music, right?
We won't play it, but we will credit them as this would have been the break music.
Because Hip Color, you do good, bro. Yeah.
Okay. We'll give you proper credit at the end. So we're going to keep this train rolling and go into the reason why we had this After Dark episode idea in the first place.
But,
so,
but there are two things I want to mention, because when you mentioned about the Netflix Squid Game thing, it's actually extremely, in my opinion, a problem. Whether or not how to solve it, what it takes to solve it, I literally have no clue. I won't pretend to know, but at least I can see that it is not good.
It's not a problem that's ever going to go away, though.
Exactly. That as well,
and
right?
Like through the latter part of this discussion, we are going to be looking into ways that people have explored in trying to remedy the situation, and we'll give our two cents in terms of how viable a solution it is.
Yeah, and it would be kind of like a BP-ish kind of back and forth between Will and I at that point. But let's just get something really straight and simple, Will. Just like a lot of the anime and manga industry, the localization, dubbing, subbing, translation community within anime, manga, light novels, and all that is overworked and underpaid severely.
Yep.
Tale as old as time, but still messed up. And also, I want to reiterate, dubbing is actually on the rise. And this is not only through personal anecdote of, like, when we look at news, there's simuldub happening either a couple of weeks after the premiere of Simulpub, but also it is just way more commonplace now. And I feel that, I don't know their exact percentage because it's kind of really hard to, but I would argue maybe back in the 1990s, early 2000s, dubbing had a bad rap. Whether it was actually accurate to have a bad rap or whether it was just conventionally known.
I think it also just came down to, I mean, we had the era of fan subs and fan dubs too, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And limited talent pool and budget and sometimes even no budget, right? So they had it rough. Whereas now I would say it's a way more established industry. Of course, you can argue there's a long way to go still, but it is still progressing. However, dubbing, I mean, we all like to be like, oh, subs is the best. And maybe that's how you feel. You can't deny, though, however, dubbing is literally way more larger than people might have thought, you know, conventionally speaking. And it was really hard to find statistics on
of
this.
How many are subbers and how many are dubbers?
No, as in, like, how many dub series are there compared to just pure subbed series? Because how are you going to find all these different streaming
there's
platforms?
There's too much.
But I can tell you at least it's on the rise.
Yep.
That's, I think, a very safe assumption to make. And it is not like a minuscule amount.
Yep.
It is significant.
So now let's get into the crux of this discussion, which is, as Jason mentioned, the Kobayashi incident. Now, first of all, a part of this discussion is going to be like a kind of recap or commentary on this particular quote-unquote controversy. If you want to know more about it, we could link a Reddit post or a news discussion just so that, you know, you can cover that issue in more extensively. This here is essentially us trying to give you as quick bare-bone detail as possible to sort of give you the idea of the issue and the impact that the legislation could have. That's mainly it. We want to try and stay as neutral as possible, just because we don't want to start like accusing people or picking sides and whatnot. In the end, like, we are merely reporting on it and commentating it. We are not trying to say that we have a particular agenda with or against a certain person or a certain group of people or even like a certain company and whatnot.
Yeah, it's mainly trying to have a debate on an industry that we care about, right? So a quick summary of events involves a woman named Jamie. Do you want me? Should I give the full name or just
Jamie Lynn Marchie?
Lynn Marchie,
American voice actress who does ADR, which is automated dialogue replacement. She's a director as well as a scriptwriter. So ADR essentially is like dubbing and localization.
And she has a very accomplished and extensive resume. So she is extremely prolific in her repertoire, and she has been in the industry for forever. So on December 22nd, 2023, on Anime News Network is where I saw it for the first time. Unrelated to Jamie, is it was reported that the manga of the Ancient Magus's Bride will be using AI translation by a company called Mantra to release the manga simultaneously in English and Japanese when it returns from the mangaka's hiatus. Also said that Witch and the Beast will get similar treatment, and the company also plans to invest money into it as well to add simultaneous releases and simplify Chinese in May. All right? So when you see that kind of wording, buzzword like AI translation and all that, obviously is going to cause a stir.
They're going to take our jobs.
Exactly. And English localizers and publishers who would probably be feeling the brunt of this news and development has a bone to pick, or they feel like their career is getting close to being in jeopardy. I mean, if we look at the writer's strike in Hollywood.
Oh, SAG, yeah.
Yeah. It's the same deal of trying to, when you hear AI taking your job, it sucks. It does. Especially when you invest all that time and money and energy and talent into it. Your livelihood is at stake. You're going to be defensive about it.
Yeah. Before we go into the next part, let's just quickly break this down a little bit just so that when we are collecting our thoughts, we're not too jumbled about it, right? Mm-hmm. So the whole thing with AI translation. There's even AI voice acting. We've talked about this as another news article before. It's definitely a contentious point because a lot of people are still very iffy about the future of AI, whether it is actually a tool that benefits mankind, whether it's used as a replacement tool or essentially just something that will eradicate a whole industry. Now, we've gone through revolutions. We've gone through industrialization. We've seen car manufacturing from Detroit completely crumble, and we see the effects of it now, right? We are not stranger at all to things changing in the name of automation. But yep. When it comes to looking at this from a cultural standpoint, or at least from a societal standpoint, not even looking at the financials of it or those kinds of implications, I think a lot of people are worried because of the fact that we may be on the precipice of losing that human touch, of reaching closer and closer to the uncanny valley, where no longer are we seeing people have a creative touch or spin in how to portray certain media. Rather, it will be kind of regurgitated through a collection of neural networks and AI prompts to give you the quote-unquote best and most accurate results of what you're looking for, especially in anime and manga. Now, the next part of the story will sort of add more fire to it, and also will give our other two cents for it. But this particular drama, when it comes to AI supposedly replacing real life translators and localizers, it's a debate that's going to rage on for a long time because this is just the beginning.
Yeah.
We're only talking about Ancient Magus' Bride and a handful of other manga, maybe even anime series going forward. There are a lot of companies now that are testing the possibility of using AI as their main business model. The amount of investment that has gone into artificial intelligence is
staggering.
Meteoric. It's insane.
Yeah. I mean, it is hype right now, but it is also one that it is revolutionary, kind of, I would say, potentially akin to the internet.
There is another aspect of it as well, in which, yes, there are going to be processes that are going to be automated or done through artificial intelligence, but at the end of the day, with the right practices in place, and I say right practices knowing full well that not all companies are going to do this, but there's still going to be human eyes reviewing what comes out of this AI translation.
Right. So it's not just transactional in that it's all or nothing with AI. It very likely, at least for the foreseeable future, is complementary, right? The typical thing that of the AI does a lot of the legwork and then you fact check or you refine it, and then because you don't have to do a lot of the things that would have taken the grunt work the time, you can then make sure that the things that does need focusing on, you can then spend more resource and time on it.
Yeah. These things are going to continuously happen. I mean, if you think back over 100 years ago, one of the biggest industries of the world was whaling. Actually, hunting down and catching whales. Not to eat them, but because at the time, the cosmetic industry really, really wanted to use whale blubber to make perfumes, to make soaps and stuff like that. Now we don't do that at all. So now, over 100 years later, there's absolutely no whaling industry for that particular purpose at all. What do? We move on. We have to adapt, right? And I'm not saying that, oh, boo-hoo, stop crying and all that. No, it's more just this is going to be a natural course of events that as long as we keep on pursuing, automation, robotics, things to be able to supplement hard labor, you're going to keep seeing these things pop up. So I'm not trying to stir the pot, not trying to pick sides. I'm just stating things
as fact, right?
As is, yes.
Yeah, and there's a reason why Will and I have come back to the discussion and the well of how AI impacts anime and manga, because it really is a hot button issue. It really is a contentious issue. And we are literally, as you said, Will, at the precipice of the start of something that may be really impactful, You can interpret that as a good thing or a bad thing. But nonetheless, I think everyone will agree it's going to change potentially how everything works. So that's why we keep talking about it. And that's why I think also y'all should pay attention to these kinds of developments, even outside of anime and manga. But of course, going back to the Kobayashi incident. So yes,
we're now going to continue like this particular instance, this particular controversy. So now specifically about Kobayashi and her Dragon Maid.
Right. Because after this whole announcement of Angel Magus' Bride, the community on both sides, as in people who like localizers and English dubbing versus people that dislike the current state of it, I'll just for simplicity's sake, let's just call it those two sides. Of course, there's a silent majority as well, but those are the two sides that are kind of then start to go at each other. And then out of nowhere, in January 2024, there was a Reddit post, again, showing a scene in episode 12 of season 1 of Kobayashi Dragon Maid that was dug up and circulated on the internet, and it kind of got viral, as we say. And there is a particular scene that involves Toru and
Lukoa.
Yeah.
And in this instance, the mention of Jamie Lynn Marshy is actually important because she is the English voice actress for Lukoa.
And also the script writer for the dub.
Yep.
So
in the subs, we will go over what they say, right? In the subs, Toru, what's with the outfit, Lukoa? Everyone was always saying something to me, so I tried toning down the exposure. How is it, Toru? You should try changing your body next.
Now, to explain the scene, Toru is at home, just chilling, doing housework, and Lukoa, her friend, buzzes in, and then she sees her all...
wearing a tracksuit, wearing like full leggings, and... in contrast to when she usually wears more revealing outfits, hence why Toru begins the exchange with, what's with that outfit?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the context laid out.
And the changing the body is because in Kobayashi Dragon Maid, you can change the shape of your whole look. So that's why she says that. So the Fanimation dub, though, decide to interpret as, Toru says, what are you wearing that for? Lukoa says, oh, these pesky patriarchal societal demands were getting on my nerves, so I changed clothes. And then Toru, in response, says, give it a week. They'll be begging you to change back.
Now, on first observation, vastly different interpretations, right? Remember, these are all English, right? The subs are in English, and the Funimation dub is in English. The content of them are extremely, extremely different. The thing is, I don't necessarily have a problem with what was said in the Funimation dub. I think the main issue is a particular word that's used in the Funimation dub, which is the word patriarchal.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people interpreting this as like, oh, this is way too woke. This is like the feminist agenda. This is people trying to, you know, ruin what Kobayashi's Dragon Maid is all about by putting their own personal biases and things they stand for up against, you know, the will of the viewers, the people who actually enjoy the anime. They're ruining the very meaning of Kobayashi's Dragon Maid. And I'm taking this from a translation standpoint. I, first of all, can already tell you, it's kind of weird that they went in that direction in terms of completely changing what the sub says into the dub. But if you take the word patriarchal out of that, there's not that much of a difference. Yes, like the words are very much different, but contextually, I can see them being kind of like for like. Yep. No problem there for me whatsoever.
And my opinion is also, I don't really want to contribute to the whole argument of wokeism, anti-wokeism, the backlash that Jamie received, or the fuel that added to the fire on both sides. To
there's me, also there's also like a very vocal supporter of Jamie, which is her name is Katrina Leonidakis. So she worked as a localizer slash translator for Funimation. She worked for Sega as well, and she got dragged into this as well because she was very supportive of how this particular dub was done. Saying that, like, you know, like in this instance, they felt that this was the best way to contextually portray what the characters are talking about, and anybody who feels that this is, like, you know, anti-man, like pure, like pro-feminism, like, you know, can, you know, eat their ass, suck your dick, whatever, like, just basically, like, that kind of did, like, stoke the fire even more. Katrina, yeah, specifically, like, she actually plays a very important role in the realm of localization and translation because she actually is a major proponent in trying to get, like, more recognition and more rights and more protections for translators, for localizers who work, as you said, in a very demanding but low-paying industry.
Yeah.
And so, like, we have to give her props there. The one criticism I do have about this whole situation is that I don't think that they were working with full, like,
autonomy,
like, bipartisan slash, like, impartiality. Like, there definitely was some level of agenda in how they were translating things because, let's be real, like,
we're all biased.
There was nothing in the subs. Or, like, if you were to hear the actual Japanese, I don't think that they ever said the word patriarchal or were even insinuating that in right. the first place.
Because for context, earlier in that scene, there were, like, the housewives in that apartment complex that were kind of saying not nice things about Lukua behind her back, kind of insinuating, you always have these revealing clothings, like, that's not cool to just pounce around like that. So that's why Lukua decided to have a more modest kind of a physical appearance, which is also against her usual mannerisms.
Yeah. What's really sad about this whole debacle is the fact that there have been two very, like, vocal sides, one of which is protecting localization and the other one, which is essentially, like, throwing out that mansplaining, anti-feminism, hatred, and vitriol towards these female voice actresses and proponents of, like, equal representation and rights for localizers and translators. Even to the point where, like, they're actually, I mean, there's a lot of YouTube channels that jumped onto this, and even, like, a lot of women were also like, you know, fuck these women for trying to be all, like, feminist and trying to be upstanding strong women when all they're really doing is just being subservient and shit. Like, they're just, like...
Throws their hat in that ring at that point.
The more I heard it, the more it's like, I think you're kind of just missing the point of what this whole controversy is about.
Exactly. Fucking exactly. When I saw this, and that's why we took the time for it to kind of like ruminate and kind of peter out, is because I wanted to see, have everyone calm down and reassess the situation. Because to me, from this point onwards, this is where I think this discussion in this AD diverges. Because for Will and I think it's pretty safe to say our opinion is actually not focused necessarily on the drama, the backlash, the back and forth between the different stances at this point. To me, it is trying to highlight the difficulty, the potential impact of localizers, translators, subbing and dubbing, and how that contributes to how we consume the anime and manga in question.
The main thing I think contributed to all of this in the first place is that with regards to subbing and dubbing, there's no industry standard of how one is supposed to translate, right? Like, for example, we've talked about this before. When we look at any Netflix series, mm-hmm. at the end, there's always going to be rolling credits, and then there's always going to be a footnote that says translation done by da-da-da-da-da.
Yep.
It's always different. There's never one consistent translator that does episode to episode to episode. So every time you're watching an anime using subs, it's always going to be different. Yep. It's not the same person who has the same context understanding of the Japanese and English language or whatever language it may be and consistently producing the same results episode to episode.
Yeah, and that's the part that boggles the mind because not within one season, within one episode is translated by someone else. That does not mean that they don't communicate or have correspondence. We don't know, actually. But it is safe to say when it's two different people, the chances of one person interpreting one thing and the other person interpreting slightly different or majorly different is kind of beholden to those two individuals, if not more, throughout the span of how many seasons, right? Or how many episodes. And furthermore, one thing I want to reiterate that is kind of personally like a pet peeve of Netflix subtitling versus Crunchyroll subtitling, for example, is what I call subtitle integration. And what that means is, for example, let's take a scene where you and I are studying and we write a list of study points because we're in Japanese in an anime, right? In Crunchyroll, they have used subtitle integration where as we are discussing what to study, the thing that you're looking at is probably the list. And by itself, you won't know what's written on there because you don't know the Japanese. Subtitle integration would turn all of those into English text such that you can understand the list while there's a conversation between you and I. However, there are two problems with that. The first one is Netflix doesn't do any of that for the most part. Or when they do, it looks exactly like the dialogue kind of captioning. Instead of having it kind of in the same location right next to or even using the same color font or something to make it easier for you to indicate that that's what you're translating. But the other thing is, for example, with that list, it will over-fucking-crowd what you're looking at on the screen, and it's kind of hard to decipher.
Another factor I wanted to contribute to this, especially when it comes to Netflix, I don't know how Crunchyroll does it. I don't want to go into that, but you remember that friend I told you about that did like translations for Netflix for whatever language into Swedish?
Yeah.
Apparently, while she was doing translations for an anime, one, not only did she not watch that anime, but two, she doesn't watch anime.
Right.
So therefore, you're already at a loss when it comes to cultural context and localization. So. Yep. The fact that there's that lack of standard, right? And I'm not criticizing anybody here.
Or even the continuity,
it's
right?
It's just that the system was already broken in the first place.
Yeah, or it wasn't firmly established such that there was nothing to break because there was nothing there. So it's kind of like a Wild West of sorts,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
So I don't want to contribute to the discussion of localizing and inserting messages and agenda in this particular context, but I just want to highlight this very blatant example of a difference between something that in essence, supposed to be as equivalent as it possibly can. All over, essentially, in my opinion as well, maybe like a word or a phrase that dramatically caused this huge upheaval.
The sub and the dub that we mentioned in that particular episode of Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, they're both English, but they're both completely different. How do you have translations, one through speech, one through text, that are both the same language, but of different context?
Yeah.
And so like you have to understand that there wasn't a one-stop guide in terms of like, this is how you do translation. Follow this guide. No, everybody has their own cheat sheets. They have their own notes. They have their own methodology of how going and translating something. And then when you add in that localizing factor in there, you have no control of who they're localizing it for, what they're localizing it from, and how they're going to have the final product shown to the people until it's too late.
Yeah. And it's a tough situation, in my opinion. And it is a very blatant example, but obviously there are different and numerous, probably hundreds of examples of varying degrees of quote-unquote severity in so many anime and mangas, dubbing or subbing.
Yeah. Now, with this controversy, a lot of fans, especially the ones who are like on the opposite side of these voice actors, actresses, and trans localizers, have now really like voiced their vitriol for the localizer economy. Like, some have even gone to like panel discussions with said voice actress and gone out and just like blasted her online in front of a crowd of people. And props to the voice actors and actresses who stand up for themselves and being like, kiss my ass, I don't care what you have to say.
But at the same time, I would argue when everyone is defensive and so sensitive, everyone overreacts.
Yeah.
And I would say everyone fucked up in one way or another at some point. Instead of de-escalating or looking for a solution, it is just merely pointing fingers and just trying to make the other person feel lower, inferior, or just lesser of an individual, and that my stance, my point of view, is the only right way to go about it.
While neither of them are fixing the problem.
Exactly.
Now, the same people that have gone out and lambasted the localizers and the voice actresses online are now also rejoicing over this next bit of news that came up because of the fact that now we have, because these are people who are also calling for their jobs. They're saying like, oh, they're inept. They cannot like work as, if they're going to be so compromised,
they're not impartial enough. Yeah.
Then that means that they should not work in this industry at all. And then lo and behold, the blow up of AI also then meant that now there's going to be AI subbing, AI dubbing. And these are the same people who are like, haha, sucks to be you, you localizer. Now you've lost your job. How does it feel? Da 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 da. So we bring on to the next piece where Crunchyroll is now testing the waters of subtitling. And I think AI has been used to do like the mouth movements for
Netflix. Yeah. Because I was fascinated by this. There was an article that I can't find now, but if someone could link it, or we'll try to find it at some point, where they were talking about for dubbing for live action, so not animated, in order, if you choose the dubbing language in your local area so that you can understand it, they change the mouth movement with using AI to mimic the actual mouth movement of the dubbing language in question, not the original language, which is both fascinating and scary at the same time.
It's a lot of, you know, model training. That's what it is. You essentially just feed it loads and loads of speech patterns and images of how the mouth moves into an AI, and then it's going to replicate those movements for those words. Fortunately, I think like we have seen some instances of it, and it's not perfect, but that's because we're still in the infancy of the utilization of AI in animation. I mean, we've talked about this before in our like how to make 3D and 2D anime better through the use of artificial intelligence.
I mean, as a side tangent, due to this, I kind of got into this VTuber rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And looking just at the technology of motion capture and trying to capture facial expressions or kind of different levels of emotion is so intricate that I actually did not know that the capabilities have progressed this far. And it really goes to show that things like AI, things like motion capture, things like in between animation, mid-journey, and all this is a very big deal that can change even podcasting. We are offered like co-hosting AI services as an option if we want it, right?
Now, I know that we've talked about AI before, and it's like it may be a bit of a broken topic talking about it again, but this is the direction that we're going in terms of the whole debacle that is subbing and dubbing. Like, we've come a long way. If you think about how anime first started, there was no dubbing or subbing. It was all in Japanese. It was only in the turn of like the 1990s to the 2000s that we started seeing more and more anime being exported worldwide. I mean, like, my first experience with anime was all in Cantonese.
Same here.
Right? And so, therefore, I always thought that, you know, Hong Kong had produced Pokemon and all that. But actually, or Doraemon is a Hong Kong property.
I thought Goku always just sounded like that.
And then you hear the original voice and I'm like, oh God, what happened here? Like, I can't hear like Doraemon's original voice actor in Japanese because I'm too attuned to listening to the legendary voice acting that he had for like the Hong Kong dub.
I also always feel a little bit uncomfortable whenever I have to say Doraemon and not Ding Dong.
Yeah.
Because I'm used to that. Even though it sounds like a very dumb name, that's what I grew up with. And that was kind of what I associate with Doraemon.
Yeah. And same with me for like watching like Chibi Maruko-chan, Suyunji.
Mm-hmm.
Like I cannot watch it in Japanese.
But, nothing against them.
But I just grew up with it in Cantonese, and I still watch it in Cantonese to this day. Believe it or not, they celebrated their 25th anniversary just a few years ago, and they're still going strong.
They're going hella strong. It's always really good on the Japanese TV rankings.
Yeah. Side note, there's actually like a trip that I wanted to do with my wife where we actually go to Shimizu, which is like the original hometown of Maruko-chan. And actually check out. So this is the thing where you're talking about how like the
oh, like anime tourism.
Yeah. I'm going to be a part of that.
I see. I mean, I kind of want to do that at some point with shit. What was that? Chihayafuru.
Mm.
I go to the temple.
Oh, that'd be dope.
That
as
one
well.
Temple.
That would be dope as well.
Just to go,
or even, or you know what?
Say Garden of Words, Shibuya Park. I will fucking kill you right now.
No, we visit all the volleyball stadiums and gymnasiums that they feature in Haikyuu. That would be sick.
They won't even let us in.
Maybe. I mean, it depends if they have like a competition. I would totally do that. But this is all just us wishful thinking of what we want to do. But let's go back onto the main topic of the sub, dub, and the woes of localization.
So AI is really, you're probably bored to death. But fortunately, I think that at this point, we are not going to talk any more about AI within this episode in terms of really focusing on it. But we will have to, unfortunately, bring it up probably numerous times throughout the existence.
Because the same people that complained about, like subbing and dubbing have gone through many, many, many iterations in which there was no subbing or dubbing to there was subbing, but there was a very limited pool of voice actors and actresses who could do it. Mm-hmm. And then there was a very, very small pool of subbing because of the fact that there weren't a lot of people who could do it again, and therefore that's when you started getting fan subs and fan dubs, and then people complaining about the quality of those things, but more importantly the legality of doing it.
And let's not forget, what is the biggest anime streaming platform on planet Earth? Crunchyroll.
And what did Crunchyroll became known for in like the late early 2000s? They were known for doing illegal fan subs
because they felt the need for it. That was before Crunchyroll as an organization existed, but because they really wanted to watch anime, and they know others wanted to. So if no one else is going to do it, why don't, you know, the individual, like we as those individuals, start it? And that's how it started this mammoth of a company.
Then you also have people who complained about the quality of subbing and dubbing from Crunchyroll, Funimation, from Netflix and all that. And then afterwards, then that's when you had the whole localizer movement, when people started trying to integrate more new age slang and terminologies into their scripts, into their voices. And then you have people complaining of that people have like personal, like quote unquote political agendas and trying to ruin the sanctity that is the anime they were watching. And then afterwards, now you have people that are like praising to the high heavens that AI is going to save this world from the rapture and all that.
Or destroy it.
Yeah, but exactly, right? Because in the end, like, you have fans in Japan that are also complaining about the usage of artificial intelligence. The same fans that were complaining about the localizers ruining the Japanese language with their personal agendas.
So, it's not clear-cut,
So in the end, it's like, pick and choose, dude. Like, don't just start fighting everything. At this point, you're just hating on everything.
Yeah. So it really does. And at the end of the day, I would want to kind of end this AD on specifically two types of discussions that we can kind of intertwine with each other, which it may not be exactly related, but I want to really emphasize when you're trying to convey a message and separating that message such that it is given to the consumer in a certain fashion, namely two facets: separating the intention of the original creator's work versus the talent that ends up producing whatever anime or manga adaptation or translation, And then the other facet is separating the work with its original creator or staff. And I don't know how exactly we will go about this. I have some examples here and there, but we have already touched a lot of it throughout this discussion. But I kind of want to have a platform where you and I can just kind of banter and really address this facet of it, because it's also very fascinating to me as well.
I think the thing that I want to sort of like round out this discussion is that, of course, we're going to say especially anime and manga, because we are first and foremost a podcast talking about anime and manga. It's in our name, Good Anime Palette Podcast, plus M for manga. But this particular medium has some of the most vocal fans and detractors, in the sense that when there is a quote-unquote controversy, no matter how big or small it is, there is going to be a large number of people that come up with their pitchforks and demand the lives of the people that ruined whatever they were enjoying.
Yeah.
Just in the same way that there are also people that will stand up for the so quote-unquote controversial people and protect them and say that, no, you're the hater, you're the one that's ruining everything in anime and manga, da-da-da-da-da. I think that's essentially why, like, we even have this whole sub versus dub debate in the first place, because let's be real. Like, I hate to keep talking about this, but you're just watching anime, man or girl, like
lady or whatever in between, just, right?
Whether you choose to read the English or listen to English, it doesn't fucking matter. You're watching anime. Leave it at that. It does not need to get that. It doesn't need to get that deep at
yeah.
all.
Yeah. It's complex, but it ain't that deep in terms of malicious intent, or you know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day,
like, this, let's be real. Like, you go on to like any like sub forum or like subreddit, and you have that, and you just look sub versus dub. The first five or six are going to be like, personally, I like watching it sub because I feel it's the closest representation of what the context is trying to be portrayed as. Or I like watching it dubs because I don't want to be reading all the time. I prefer to be able to watch without having to take my eyes off of the character.
Extremely valid.
And then there's going to be that one person who says, if you don't watch it sub, you're a fucking idiot. Oh, dude, you can't read English? What's wrong with you? You're a fucking lowlife. It just takes that one person to say that one thing, and then others will be like, yeah, you're a fucking moron.
Or, it's a mob mentality, right?
Yeah.
And it also is reflected in another medium that is extremely prominent now, video games.
Oh, yeah.
We used to be
oh, yeah.
A very niche, like beyond niche community that gets made fun of and teased in like typical like Lynch, the director who did like Breakfast Club.
Oh, don't know, but go on.
Okay. Anyways, it's like the jocks making fun of the nerds, right?
Now you have people. It's like, you're playing Call of Duty with a controller. You fucking beta. What's yeah. wrong with you? Wait,
you don't mouse and keyboard with a rig?
You're
a console player.
You play on PlayStation
and not Xbox,
you fucking noob.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, because it is so kind of a thing that
you own a MacBook.
I mean, I do own a MacBook. Yeah, it's like, I mean,
it's like we're all part of the same team,
right?
Why are we going all red versus blue against each other here?
But I think it's because everyone protects things that they really care about and so precious, right? And when you are kind of growing up in a medium where you have to always defend yourself because you're marginalized, your automatic instinct is to then go on the attack or the defensive instantaneously.
This is orb.
Exactly.
You're
an orb.
You're going to fight and die on that hill to protect the beliefs that hold your world up. And there's going to be some heretic that comes in and tells you otherwise, and the only thing you can do is burn them alive.
Yep. Then all of a sudden, within video game industry, it now supersedes, I think, movie, comic books, music combined.
I mean, even just talk anime in general, there are people that are like, if you like watching video game adaptations, you're a fucking lowlife. What's right. wrong with you? It's like, just play the video game. Stay in your lane. Like,
yeah.
But why? Like, there are plenty of good video game adaptations that people should watch and care for. Like, there
are people, what if I don't want to sit through a 50-hour video game?
There are people who've never played Danganronpa but watched the anime.
What if I don't want to play Ace Attorney because I don't have a Nintendo DS, or I don't want to sit through, you know, a point-and-click adventure game, essentially, which is still really good?
I've already said that, like, I think people should not watch the Nier Automata anime because, like, the game's way better, but that, again, is my opinion. Right, there's going to be people who want to watch the anime, in which case, go for it. I have no problem with whatever you do whatsoever, except Tokyo Ghoul. Like, please read the manga. Do not watch the anime.
Right, but still, right? Then imagine, going back to the video game example, if you Google any official statistics reports, half of the industry, almost half, if not more, is now run by mobile gaming.
Yep.
Do you really think that that is a pill that even I like to admit to? In terms of
microtransactions alone, right?
Yeah. Like, it's like when like Honkai Star Rail or Genshin Impact release a character and they earn...
Okay, let's be real. Both of those games look really, really good, but I'm never going to spend any money playing those games.
Or let's go back to anime slightly. FGO.
Yep.
Fate Grand Order. The pools that they have, you can talk about how malicious the microtransactions, the gambling element, the loot box. Okay, all that aside.
It did a world of good for the Fate series, man.
And like, it raked in shit tons of money, where if they were to spend maybe the same amount to produce a video game of a grand scale that takes... I mean, I can't believe I said that with FGO because it's Grand Order. It's just not worth it in terms of the money to time and profit revenue ratio.
I'm even so far going so far as to say, without that money, you could say goodbye to an adaptation of Fate Strange Fake,
which exactly
looks amazing. Still no release date, but it looks amazing.
We'll be there when it shows up, right? Yeah. But if it wasn't for those, it's like a hard pill to swallow, right? And similarly, within the anime and manga industry, manga is now, and also I would argue light novels as well, is really on the rise. I mean, I haven't even mentioned another new player that has entered the ring recently. Here comes a new challenger, audiobooks.
Yeah.
Recently, a lot of people has been on like Bookwalker and stuff, have actual audiobooks of the light novels. And let me tell you, I bought one. They're not bad. Like, they're pretty good.
It's always like you always have to pick a team, don't you? Right, you got to be team sub. You can't be team dub, right? But it's also, but then again, it's also like we've had a debate of whether you should watch the anime or read the manga. Like the plain and simple answer is it doesn't fucking matter, right? It depends on what it is that you want to read or what you want to watch, and if it's so like this particular way of consuming this media works for you, then stick with it. That's essentially it. I know loads of people who love watching the Tokyo Ghoul anime, despite my stance on the anime.
And my stance as well.
And I'm not going to take it away from them, right? Like,
I will judge you slightly, but I won't go out and criticize you in open forum.
Call you
and
a moron, you know?
And then dox you and then write a 5,000-word essay on why Route A is the bane of all existence.
Or, you know, worse yet, like, write death threats to certain people.
Yeah, shit, like, right? Like, all of that is fucked up and dumb.
Yeah. It's insane that, like, this mob mentality exists within a medium that we are all a part of and we all support. It just, there's just, like, you know, certain individuals that really want to push their perspective on others, and it's crazy. We've come so far in terms of making it so that anime itself is this well-respected medium, and it literally is like one of the biggest mediums in all of entertainment, right? You can't go anywhere in the world without seeing a Slam Dunk or a One Piece poster somewhere.
Yo, did you know that the new Demon Slayer premiere of the latest arc in the U.S., by the way, in the fucking U.S. on opening weekend is number one? Can we say that again? Yes, number one. Okay, that weekend. That's fucking amazing. SIM is a song that charted like
U.S. top Billboard.
Yeah. And it was from an anime. like 10, 20 years ago, it's almost inconceivable that such a possibility would exist.
And yet we have people on the internet fighting each other about 30 seconds of a dub on Kobayashi's Dragon Maid.
I think talking about those 30 seconds is important to illustrate the disparity between translation, localization, but not in a way that is fueled by all this unnecessary antagonizing forces. And it is also not in my place to really have an opinion on that, even though I might have one.
You might not like it. You might support it. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. And it's not bigger than you make it out to be.
Yeah. It's one incident in the pantheon of that timeline that is anime and manga, right?
Yeah. And I think a lot of those kinds of real, like, angry, vitriolic, like, perspectives come from the fact that they listen to certain voices, certain perspectives. I'm not naming one or two specifically. It's just that because there are a lot of YouTubers who do the same thing anyway. So you can pick and choose which one is the one who started it. But yeah, like you just find you find your king, you find your queen, and then you fight with them against whoever speaks against you. And that's
captain, my captain, right?
That's exactly. Well, they all die at the end, but you know,
yeah,
yikes,
yeah. Right. But it's a touchy subject, obviously, and it's not one that we can resolve.
I mean, that's also why we were very clear in the beginning that we're not picking sides, because we don't want to be the ones, we don't want to be the arbiters of what's right and wrong.
Because it will be foolish of us to assume we have...
We're not the authority on this.
Yeah. Except...
As powerful as the GAP is, you know?
Yes, the dynamic duo that we are... We unfortunately know when it is the right time to voice our concerns and the right time to
just say we're merely commentating on it.
But it really is important, though, because, I mean, okay, let's, do you want to...
We are really in, like, murky waters in terms of, like, the future of anime and manga. And this is not to say, like, the content of it is going to be worse or better or whatnot. We are really seeing, like... From our anime perspective, actually retrospective, that anime was doing way better than it was during the COVID times. So we are in that period where anime is bouncing back to where it was pre-COVID. The issue now is that because we've come back to that equilibrium, we're now back in that normal state, that it's now easier for us to pick apart, you know, the small little...
intricacies,
and like imperfections that exist and make it bigger than it's supposed to be.
I mean, Will talks about the oversaturation of anime any given anime season. I also agree with him, but what are we going to do about it? Unfortunately, our platform, what we can do or should do is talk about it, maybe give you our takes, provide a platform for you to hear our thoughts as well as hear your thoughts if you want, but we're not going to solve it at like day one. Or we might not, or the two of us is definitely not going to solve it at all.
Yeah. And it's not to say, like, oh, you guys are just on the fence. You guys are like,
oh, you're pussies because you don't take a fucking stance. It's like, no, I am taking a fucking stance.
It's just that if we did, like, there's no winning or losing. In the end, like, we're all just fighting over something that really is not a big issue.
And if it
was an issue, it's not our place to be the ones to tell you what's right or wrong.
Exactly. But what I can agree with is something needs to happen, whether it is tomorrow, day after, a year, 5 or 10 years. Something is going to happen that will change the dynamics, whether it is AI contributing to it or not.
Yeah, so we still have a little bit of time. And I know you didn't want to go that deep into like the whole AI talk, but like realistically, do you feel that the usage of AI, like, mouth movements, like automation, the way of using AI to automatically translate dubs and subs and all that, that can't be the answer, right? Like, or is it as simple as this is going to solve everything? I know it's, of course, like a blanketed statement, me like asking you the question because you know the answer is who fucking knows. But from your perspective, is it as simple as just there is like one solution for all? Or are we like barely even like scratching the surface, even though we've had anime for well over like 80 years and we still don't know what to do with it.
So are you asking me specifically if AI is the answer?
I think, like, or what would be the answer to try and fix this in terms of, like, do we need better standards and practices? Do we need to have an actual committee in place to be able to give ideas on how to translate things? Or does it even need that? Like, do we just, like, leave anime as is because there's beauty in imperfection?
Just like Orb, right?
Yeah.
But we keep saying that, but it's actually very accurate. My opinion is, in regards to AI or anything really, in terms of technological advances or integration or all that, you know, buzzword stuff, is that whether we like it or not, it's going to arrive. It could arrive tomorrow, day after, a year, 5 or 10. It will arrive because you can't stop it, because collectively as a human race, we won't stop it collectively.
And even if there is something that we do like, there's nothing to guarantee that it'll stay.
Exactly. Then, of course, comes the risk and reward or the payout, that kind of ratio in regards to how AI is used, right? I will then hearken back to when we talked about AI last, is adaptability. It is going to happen. We might want to prevent it or restrict its growth, but it's going to happen. Then comes, what are we going to do about it? At the end of the day, we will figure it out. Because if we don't, we dead. Or as in dead as an industry, dead as a race. Even I don't want to be so melodramatic, right? But it will have to arrive and we will have to deal with it.
Yeah. All we can strive for is not for people to chase perfection or to completely eliminate any mistakes. It's more just we can only hope that the people in control of translating anime and manga are at least doing the best they can.
Yeah. And maybe they need to have something to kind of nudge literally everyone in the industry to do something about it.
Whether it's support or an incentive.
Yeah, or maybe sometimes even nefarious purposes, and then therefore there is disapproval and an uprising of sorts, right? Or a disagreement, and then it leads to a movement. To me, honestly, the biggest issue and the biggest problem is if we do nothing. Yep. Because if we do nothing, we are not allowed to then therefore have a say in getting pissed off in the direction it dictates.
Yeah.
Because if we don't do anything about it, then we shouldn't have fuck all to complain when it doesn't go in the way that we envisioned, because who the fuck could read our minds as a whole, as a collective, right?
I mean, it was only just a few weeks ago that we were kind of complaining about the fact that we may or may not see a good adaptation of the Fable because of how the production process is for seinen anime and manga. So perhaps if we just lay low and not do anything about it, it'll stay that same way. We can no longer complain because we've subjected our fate to it.
Right.
Whereas if we were to speak up and hopefully push the needle to try and get people to be like, no, we actually want more faithful adaptations of seinen manga to be more of realistic and faithful adaptation, maybe that'll give companies enough incentive to be like, oh, this is what they want. Okay, I see that trends are moving in that direction. Maybe a change is due. Who knows? Right?
Right.
But it's not without trying, right?
Yeah. I'd rather have anyone try and fail than to not try, because you are essentially putting the burden of responsibility on whatever outside forces is actually doing something about it.
You can dribble a ball as much as you like. You don't shoot, you don't score. That's essentially it, right? You don't score, you don't win.
Yeah. If someone blocks you, you fucking try to shoot.
Yeah.
It could be against all odds, and the chance of you is null, but it won't be null. It'll be like 0.001.
At the end of the day, it'll also be the effort that we appreciate. That's essentially it. There's never really anything that we can massively detract from anime and manga unless, you know, you have
an agenda.
Yeah.
You're biased, which I'm not blaming you for it, but it's also like, what are you going to do with it? And that, to me, is the biggest issue that I think everyone's lose sight of. And both of us lose sight of it in other realms or in other instances, just because this time we seem to be more level-headed about this doesn't mean the next time, even within the same topic, we will not have that much of a calm, cool, collected take.
Yeah. So I think at the end of the day, especially now that it's been, you know, several weeks, a few months since this Kobayashi debacle, that now that cooler heads have prevailed, we should all at least look at the state of the industry, the state of the communities that lie behind localization and translation, and just get behind them. There's no progress to be made if all we do is just point fingers and blame each other for a problem that we've clearly missed. And it's easier said than done, but it's something we have to do. We can't just sit back and just accept the fact that there may be actors and actresses who want to, you know, input their own personal agendas. We can't ignore the fact that there are people who are rightfully or wrongfully, like, accusing people of ruining anime and manga because they don't see eye to eye with how certain things are made, and that's why they hate it. Like, it's not fair to the medium as a whole if we have everybody fighting against each other when clearly the problem isn't anything to do with these people. It's right there, right then and there. But we are just too focused on fighting with each other to do anything about the root problem.
Yeah. And I will just say as my last parting thought, because even though I wanted to go a little bit into another realm, I think we're going to just save that for another day, because I think we are ending on a very good spot. What do you think?
Yeah, this is good. But I can also see this being like, there's probably a couple more
After Saga Darks. Saga 2, 3, yeah. 4, right. Well, more to come at the very least, right? Continuation. I mean,
you never know, man. Like, we probably release another one in 3-4 months when, like, another big controversy comes up, when we have to quell the flames.
Or when we have enough to really warrant another one of these. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure it sounds like both of us can agree that there will be more of these, but when that will show up, I don't know yet. Well, but
subs and dubs have been around and argued for the last 30 years. It's not changing anytime soon. I mean,
here we had a topic that I am now going to ask about, like, the creator's work versus the creator themselves.
Yeah.
Which could be a BP, or it could be like another part two of this thing. But that aside, at the end of the day, the most important point is trying to tackle a situation that, let's just be very honest, is fucking hard. Translation is fucking hard, despite how you feel about it. I feel comfortable saying that. Localization is fucking hard, despite how you might feel about it. Hopefully, Will and I has convinced you that a simple thing as reading text on your favorite anime or reading it from a panel of manga pages is not easy to accomplish. It's one of those things where when it works, you don't notice it. When it fucks up, in your opinion, if it fucks up, then you glaringly notice it. This Kobayashi incident highlights that, but where the energy focuses on the aftermath of it, to me, is understandable, but I actually like to focus on the issues that surround why such an incident can occur, because when you look at it from, like, zooming out, this is a blip on the line that is the anime and manga industry, subbing, dubbing, localization. And to quote it quite simply, it's so hard, complex, and unsolvable as for each of us that it can only be solved by all of us.
Yeah. It's going to sound harsh what I'm saying, but y'all should just be thankful that you've got anime to watch and anime to read. Like, it's that's as simple as it is. Without their work, none of us would be able to watch or read anime and manga. So, all we can do is band together and try to make the product better.
Fuck it, I'm just going to add one other thought. If you think the situation now is crazy, might I remind you, as like one of the other constant talking points on the Good Anime Pal podcast, is anime and manga, light novels, visual novels, all that, is progressing and growing at a rapid, hugely rapid pace. So imagine this issue magnified however many times.
In the last 2 years, we've had 5 to 10 anime series that have been tossed and turned in being the number one on my anime list. That shows that in the last 2 years alone, Bungie the Rock, Fieren, fucking Fruits Basket was 3 years ago, but that still counts, mm-hmm. right? Oshinoko, mm-hmm. like, those are just four. Fucking Kaguya-sama was in there too. Love is War Season 3. Like, Ultra Romantic is.
Yes.
We have never been in a better spot for anime and manga.
Oh, but Jason and Will, you're just talking about a vacuum of my anime list. Okay, then let's talk, like, let's go even more macro. How about how much manga sales have been circulating all over the world? Forget about just in Japan, domestically speaking, internationally speaking. Then you think about the accessibility of Bookwalker. You know, you think about, you know, all these apps that have simulpub, simuldub, you know, and then you think about how amazing anime and manga has reached in terms of the pinnacle of almost in many ways the antithesis of the East, which is the West, of SIM, that's AOT, about Demon Slayer, about all these successes in an industry that when like 20 years ago was kind of in some ways almost non-existent, not meaning that they didn't exist.
The longest standing ovation
for Bell
at Cannes.
Come on,
right? Like, let's just enjoy anime and not shit on each other because you just didn't enjoy one thing, you know?
Yeah, and it's very easy for Will and I mean, to get on our soapbox to kind of being like wag the finger at all y'all, right? Yeah,
we might come across as all high and mighty because we know more than we are holier than that.
Or because we're hiding behind a microphone and such, right? I get that. And we are in some ways. But it's also like doing our due diligence and responsibility of trying to emphasize a point of fostering a conversation rather than fostering an unnecessary war between two sides that really should be focusing on essentially tending to the garden and growing rather than, it's like when you're in a garden and a plant all of a sudden starts growing at a rapid pace. And if you don't tend to it and you start fighting over what fertilizer to use or which seeds to plant or
it's gonna die
or what name we should call this plant, it's either gonna die or consume the whole garden and break it and then everything falls apart.
And that's actually a very, very good way of putting the situation into words. Like, yeah, this is something that is so beautiful right now that's growing, but it's growing at a pace where people are kind of ignoring the major talking points and letting this thing grow out of control.
Because just because it is imperfect doesn't mean it doesn't deserve our love and affection like Orb. Okay.
We love Orb.
We love fucking Orb.
I think definitely not. By the time this episode comes out, I don't think Orb is even out yet. But anyways, we love Orb.
I don't think
praise Orb.
Praise be to the Orb. Okay.
Kind of want to buy an astrolabe now, damn it.
You can probably do that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how to even use it because
just stare at the stars and hopefully something happens.
What stars in fucking Hong Kong, bro?
That's true. You have to go to Tam O' Shanhan to even see a star. And you have to hope that it's a clear day, too. Cause
wait, what are you talking about? There's a star right here. Okay, anyways, thank you for listening to this episode of the Good Anime Pal podcast. We really went off on a lot of subjects and topics and opinions, but we really liked talking about it. I hope we come across as passionate because we really feel a lot of love and passion for this industry. And if you really love what you're hearing, we also would like to hear from you. And also, if you could leave a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice, that would be awesome. You can also let us know how right or wrong we are. Please don't have any like really bad insults and stuff. Like, please, let's have constructive criticism. Or so far, I know a lot of the correspondence I've had has been extremely interesting and illuminating. But you can contact us through our email, gapalette@gmail.com, GAPALETTE, all lowercase, all one word, using the handle @palettegood, capital P and capital G, all one word. or through our GAP Discord server, and our other social media links are also provided in the show description. We have a website. We encourage you to check it out, www.goodanimepalette.com, all lowercase, all one word. Music credits for this episode. Our intro music is Body Bounce by Ballpoint. Our break music, which wasn't used, but we will give you props nonetheless because you're awesome, is Laser Drops by Hip Color. And our outro music is 2011 by Rocket Jr. You can support the music artists that we feature by listening to them on Spotify, Apple Music, or your music listening platform of choice. And Epidemic Sound provides all of our royalty-free music. If you're interested, you can sign up using the referral link in our show description. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, man, this was a very good episode.
I had no idea how it was going to turn out because I was kind of worried, to be honest.
When you err on the side of controversy, it's really hard to make sure that we're both on the same page. But I don't think we needed to be because we were kind of focusing on... because
we're in sync.
Well, it wasn't so much that we were trying to dive deeper into the controversy. We were more actually like looking at what the root cause of this controversy was. And like from that point, it was very easy to be more objective because we both have very similar views on why this debacle even sparked in the first place, and therefore it wasn't too hard to sort of understand what direction we needed to go in and talk about this.
As an aside,
it was a lot more constructive, which is good.
As an aside, what do you kind of want to see for if we're, because it sounds like we're going to continue this kind of, I don't know, what do you call it, like the saga, if you will. What do you think are areas that you would be kind of interested in to tease or to imply that we might cover?
Well, it's not so much a tease, but a wish list. I would actually absolutely love to interview someone that is working as a freelance translator.
Fuck yeah, that would be fucking awesome.
I would love to do that. I don't think that my Swedish friend will be able to do it just because of time difference and all that, and the fact that she's also insanely busy. But if you can just find somebody that either works as like a freelance translator, a freelance voice actor or actress, or someone who does anything to do with like localization of foreign material and all that, whether it be like anime, manga, or anything else, really, because I do want to know more about like the process and the hardships that go into this. Because regardless of it being anime or manga, like these kinds of problems exist in other areas too, right? It just so happens that because we are the Good Anime Palette Podcast, like we have to be of a more anime angle, but.
Sometimes we can't pick who we choose in terms of who answers the beck and call, right?
Yeah.
But as long as it's within the wheelhouse, we would always welcome our hands and our doors to everyone. Have a good night, guys, because it's after dark, even though it's not dark now.
Imagine listening to this first thing in the morning, goddamn.
Yeah, fuck.
This is heavy. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to this. Enjoy the rest of your evening or your day, and we will catch you all very, very soon.
Peace.